welcome to the Diz Dads Podcast Midweek Destinations and Diversions Show. It's the Dad Show, your hump day Disney vacation fix for Wednesday, August 9th, 2017. The Dad Show is brought to you by Kingdom Strollers. Kingdom Strollers is Orlando's premium stroller and crib rental vendor. Why pay more for a less comfortable, less versatile stroller in the theme parks? Make your reservation at kingdomstrollers.com. You'll pay less for the rental, and they'll deliver the stroller of your choice to your resort. And pick it up from the resort at the end of your vacation for free. Kingdom Strollers, your first choice for Orlando stroller rentals, and an authorized Walt Disney World stroller vendor. Today on the Dad Show, we're talking with Dustin Hurt, and he's going to talk about kicking off the summer at Disneyland with his family over Memorial Day weekend. Well, welcome to the Dad Show, Dustin.
Yeah, thanks for having me on.
So, this was a trip that you said, as we were getting ready, you know, kind of almost didn't happen.
Yeah, we actually had, you know, aside from what we talked about, we had a lot of issues before this trip started with my daughter. She had a couple things leading up to the trip, and the biggest of which was she actually broke her arm about a week before we were set to leave.
Oh, I now see. I remember you posting the picture of the poor kid with the pink cast and wondering, you know, how that was going to affect the trip. So that was like a week before your trip, right?
Yeah, that was the week before, so we almost had to put the trip on hold, you know, pending everything, finding out how bad the break was and getting the doctors okay to go ahead and fly across the country.
Okay, so you're not – so let's give people a little context here. You know, to start off with, it's not like you're a Southern California local. You know, going to Disneyland for you is a trip. And talk about, you know, what the – travel piece was like for you all, because you know, it's you're traveling with two adults and two young children, and now two young children, one of whom is in a cast. So how did that travel piece go?
So it was interesting, just because first we were flying out to Seattle to visit my family up there. My grandma was having her 80th birthday. So we were flying out to surprise her for that, along with my dad. So we were all going to meet up there, you know, sort of a family reunion.
Okay.
For her 80th birthday, spend some time in Seattle before heading down to Disneyland. So we had two flights to make it through, which it's always, you know, fun traveling with kids and all their stuff. So.
All right. Now, your youngest is like – really youngest, right?
Young. She was 22 months for okay. this trip. And then my son, Paxton, he's 6 during this trip.
All right. So now she was still under 2. So did you, you know, go with the frugal lap child, or did you buy a seat and, you know, deal with the extra cost of a fourth ticket?
No, we're frugal all the way. So we lap child and then hope there's empty seats that she could sit in. But that wasn't the case here. So she was in our laps for the whole flight from Louisiana all the way up to Seattle. And then same thing from Seattle down to Anaheim.
Okay. And that Louisiana to Seattle flight's not a short flight. That's got to be a, what, 6-hour flight or so?
It was 5 hours.
Okay.
We managed to get a nonstop flight and, you know, do the best we could with
sure.
it.
Sure. Yeah, no, hey, nonstops are where it's at. I'm definitely a fan. All right, so you know, the flight, interesting, you had the stop in Seattle first, so it does help a little bit, at least with the time change adjustment, because that's the other big thing when people are heading from, you know, East Coast time zones to West Coast time zones. It can be a little tricky to get readjusted, but you had a few days in Seattle kind of as a head start for that. So when it came to Disneyland, what were the things that were sort of going into the trip on your must-do list? What were the things that you kind of planned the rest of the trip around?
Anytime we go to Disneyland, the must-dos are always, you know, whatever's different from Disney World. Since we're closer to World, we're able to go there more often. So when we go to Disneyland, we want to make sure we're hitting the things that we can't do all the time. So for this trip, Guardians had just opened, you know, stuff like Pirates and some of the dark rides at Fantasyland that we don't have at Disney World.
Sure.
Things like that, that either are the ride itself is different or they just don't have in Disney World. You know, we'll sit down and make our list of top, you know, three or four things that we want to hit each trip to make sure, you know, we at least do those, because you never know what can happen traveling with little kids.
Yep.
So we want to make sure everybody gets at least their highlights for the trip.
Right. All right. So you've got your list of highlights, your must-do list, and you're flying in from Seattle. So where are you staying this trip?
Well, one thing I want to talk about for flying in, we actually flew into Long Beach Airport.
Oh, okay.
Instead of LAX.
Right. I'm a big fan of flying into anywhere but LAX.
Oh, yeah. This was actually our first time not flying into LAX.
Okay. Because
previous trips, we had spent some time in the Hollywood area. This trip, we weren't going to have any of that, so we were looking for a better option. And Long Beach was actually cheaper than flying into LAX. So we were thrilled with flying into there, just with how much smaller and more manageable. The rental car facilities were all on site. You didn't have to take a shuttle, you know, to an off-site place to pick up a rental car. Made things so much easier and smoother flying into Long Beach.
Yeah, I mean, I think a lot of people forget that flying into Los Angeles to go to Disneyland doesn't have to mean LAX. As a matter of fact, LAX is sort of the bottom of my list. We've flown into Orange County, into SNA, which I love. You know, it's a small airport similar to Long Beach. Not a lot of distance between, you know, the gates and the front of the airport, so it's easy in and easy out. Sounds like similar situation at Long Beach. And you've also got Ontario. And all three of those airports are really not any further than LAX once you account for the traffic and the additional time it just takes physically to deal with the massive size of LAX.
Yeah, it was, you know, just getting to the resort quicker that even, you know, next time we go back, it's a point to look at these other smaller airports, you know, even if it might cost a little bit more, it's worth it in the time and headaches that you save.
Yeah. And I've found more and more that those flights into those smaller airports are often the less expensive flights because the discount carriers will fly into those secondary airports just because they tend to charge them less for their gate fees than the big international airports do. And so, you know, they take advantage of that and then they can pass the cost savings on. So that also tends to make for more direct flights in my experience.
Yeah, because that's what we did. We flew JetBlue from Seattle to Anaheim there.
Yeah. All right. So the flight was something new and different and worked well for you. You then, you know, headed towards Disneyland Resort and kind of back to the where we started on the travel piece here. Where were you staying for the Disneyland part?
We were staying at the World Mark by Wyndham on Catella.
Right. And is that is that a timeshare property or?
It is, yes. Okay. We have Wyndham points. So, you know, like I said, we were frugal before. So anytime we can, you know, save on a hotel, we'll use our points to stay at a Wyndham property.
Yeah. And that one's probably about the closest timeshare you're going to get to Disneyland. I know Corey Day was on the show. Probably close to a year ago now. It's been a little while, but, you know, they stayed at, another one of the timeshare, one of the Lawrence Welk, timeshare properties that was a little farther away. You know, there's not as many of them around Disneyland, as there is on the other side over near Disney World, but, a few pretty nice ones. And the Wyndham World Mark sounds like, you know, it was a good option for you. Talk a little bit about the facilities there, because I don't think we've had anybody talk about it before.
Right. So, I mean, we had a one-bedroom unit, so that's another reason we like staying at Wyndham, is because, you know, it's like any, you know, DVC or any type of timeshare where you have a living room area, a kitchen, you know, a dining room table, and then the bedroom is separate with the bathroom. So with the one bedroom, you got a king size bed in the room and then a queen size pull out sofa in the living room. So my son took the sofa, we had the bedroom, and our daughter was in a pack and play that was like in the little hallway between the bedroom and the bathroom, right by the, where the AC unit would be. So she had her white noise to help keep her asleep, which was helpful.
Yeah, and everybody had their own space.
Yep.
Very nice.
Now they advertise or tell you when you check in, they're only, you know, 0.8 miles from Disneyland. I think they're a little generous with that number. It's probably the edge of their property. Right.
The closest edge of their property and the closest edge of Disney's property.
Right. You know, it was about a 15 to 20 minute walk from the resort, probably closer to 20 minutes pushing the two strollers.
All right. Well, that's actually not bad, though.
Not bad at all.
I mean, if you think about it, you couldn't walk to a Disney park from about 80% of the on-property Walt Disney World resorts, you know, to get to a park. So
right. And so being that close, you know, we didn't have to drive back and forth to the park. Whenever we were ready to go, we could just leave. You know, they have the other standard stuff for the resort. You know, they have a pool, hot tub. They have an arcade for the kids with video games and air hockey tables, stuff like that.
Sure. So your basic resort amenities. It sounds like a good alternative for somebody who, again, like you were saying, looking to save a little money on that part of their trip. And the timeshare piece there. Like I said, it's got, as far as I know, it's the closest to Disneyland proper. 20-minute walk.
Yeah, they do have views of the parks as well.
Oh, wow.
It's tall enough so when you're checking in, because they don't know which room you're going to get, they'll tell you if you want to go see fireworks or anything like that, you can actually go view it from the top of their parking garage.
Cool.
You can actually see the fireworks at night. We lucked out in that our room actually had a theme park view where we could see the back of Mission Breakout and the fireworks from Disneyland.
Oh, nice. Yeah, that's a really great view. I'm not sure there are any Disneyland hotels that will give you quite that view.
Yeah, we weren't expecting it, but as soon as we walked in the room and looked out, you know, our window to the balcony, you could see the back of Mission Breakout there. And judging where the rest of the park was, I figured we'd be able to see the fireworks as well. And sure enough, we were able to.
All right. So talked a little bit about, you know, where you were staying and the distance to Disneyland. How many park days did you have in store for yourselves on this trip?
Originally, we bought 4-day park tickets. We planned on 4 days. We were going to do another day somewhere else. We were looking at Legoland or Universal. We had done Legoland the previous trip. My son loved it. We were looking at Universal just because we had never done it out there before. But in the end, we decided against both of those just because there's not enough for both the kids. Their age range is separated a little bit too much to where even at Legoland and Universal, everybody would have to sit out too many rides.
Yeah, you'd be doing a lot of that split up stuff, and we all do it. I mean, we did it a lot for a while there, but you know, I understand the more you can avoid it, the better. And dealing with the broken arm on top of it probably made it even harder because there are some things, for example, at Legoland that would probably have been perfect for her, but that she couldn't do because she only had one hand.
Yeah, a lot of that stuff, you know, parents can't ride with the kids on a lot of the things at Legoland. So the kids have to be able to hold themselves up and hold themselves in the vehicle. And with the broken arm, we weren't comfortable with that. Yeah. So we ended up deciding we would just add a fifth day to Disneyland.
Okay. So 5 days at Disneyland, you've got a good long time there. We'll get into details of the properties, but I'm curious with, you know, 5 park days, what your kind of usual pattern to the day is, if there is one. Do you have a sort of a rhythm to how you approach the parks? You know, when you've got 5 park days at Disneyland?
We wanted 5, you know, just because we knew it's the start of summer. We didn't know how bad crowds were going to be, how hot it was going to be for the kids. So we were able to take our time with that many days. We didn't have to try and cram everything in a 2 or 3 day trip.
Sure.
So depending on what we plan to do that day, if the day we were going to try and stay late to see one of the nighttime activities, we always made sure, you know, we're going to take a break and get back and rest. If we weren't going to try and see any of the nighttime stuff, maybe we would see how long we could last throughout the day to try and have our daughter take a nap in the stroller or something like that, so we wouldn't necessarily have to go back for a break.
Nice. Okay. So that's good. And having those 5 days, it left you with the flexibility to kind of experiment and see what worked best when.
Yeah, you know, because as like everything, you know, you have a plan, and as it goes along, things happen to where you have to adapt. So
we like to say you have a plan and then you have kids.
Yep. So we were able to pretty much adjust however we wanted, just because we had so many days. If we didn't get to it today, we'll get to it tomorrow.
Right, right. So let's go ahead and dive into the parks then, and start on the California Adventure side, because I think that's maybe the side that was getting a little extra attention on this trip. There were a lot of things there that were new even from your last trip, and a lot of things that are different there that you're not going to find over on the East Coast side. So what were some of the things that you were really kind of focused on at California Adventure, and then, you know, how'd those play out for you?
The pretty much 2 main things we were focused on, because while we were planning the trip, you know, news broke that Guardians was going to open up, and we were only going to have about, it was probably a week or less that it was open before we got there. So we knew we weren't going to have any tips or tricks online. We were going to have to wing it all by ourselves.
Right. Yeah, because you were there over Memorial Day weekend, and May 27th was opening day. So you had, what, 3 days before you got there?
Right, because we flew into Anaheim Memorial Day.
Oh, okay. So you were actually just after Memorial Day weekend.
Yes.
Okay.
So Tuesday was our first park day. But even still, you've got 4 days. And while we're on vacation, we're not exactly keeping up with the latest news and tips from Disney to know how to tackle the park.
Sure.
And at that point, most people hadn't come up with a solid game plan yet. So that adapted throughout the trip for how we were going to handle that.
All right.
And
so
the other
well, wait,
key
before
point,
we get on, okay. Before we go on, let's talk about it while we're there.
Yeah.
So walk us through the various experiments with Guardians of the Galaxy Mission Breakout.
Pretty much every day that we were going to go to California Adventure had the extra, you know, the extra magic hours in the morning. So we were already starting behind the resort guests.
Right, right.
So the first day we got there, probably got there an hour before the park was supposed to open. Park opening, I believe, was 9. So extra magic hours would have started at 8, I believe.
Right, yeah, they'd start an hour before regular opening.
Right. So by the time we got there an hour before park opening, and the line was maybe halfway into the courtyard area there in the distance between Disneyland and California Adventure.
Okay.
So we already knew starting out, you know, we're a little bit behind. We'll probably have to get here earlier the next couple of days. Because as soon as they let the resort guests in, they let the regular park guests into like a standby area for those two attractions.
Okay.
For you had a line for Guardians standby and a line for Guardians Fast Pass. So by 8:15 in the morning, they were letting everybody in, and you to go past a certain point, you had to show whether you were a resort guest or not.
Oh, okay. So
the queues for that, you know, they were taking up any space they could. So we did Fast Pass each time, just because it would be too hard to have both of us be able to ride and do rider swap.
Right.
First thing in the morning. So I would go into the Fast Pass queue where they took up pretty much all of the Disney Junior queue.
Okay.
And would just have you held off to the side there until park actually opened, and then walk you all the way up to where the Mission Breakout Fast Pass kiosks were.
Okay. And so what strategy did you find over the 5 days to be sort of the most successful in getting you onto the ride, you know, sort of the most smoothly, whether it was the quickest or not, the one that kind of took the least bouncing around and juggling of things?
What ended up being the easiest for us was, since we didn't have to drive a car, so we didn't all have to get there at the same time, was me and my son could get ready rather quickly compared to my wife and daughter. So everybody would get up at the same time. Me and my son would get dressed right away, and we'd grab our breakfast to go and walk straight to the park and get in line. Because the one thing we noticed is all the turnstiles were basically available. So you had half of them were for the extra magic hours, and the other half were for regular park guests. So we were able, by doing that, getting there, say, an hour and a half before park was supposed to open for us, we were able to be one of the first, you know, handful of people in line for regular guests. So that would put us at the front of the regular guest line for the fast passes.
Right,
so
right.
So you were able to get a fast pass that was within the first hour of park opening.
See, and that's really useful, because when you do that, it keeps you from dealing with, you know, the frustration a lot of people experienced, for example, grabbing the first fast pass for Radiator Springs Racers when Cars Land first opened, which is you get that first fast pass, and because the ride is so popular and it's so hard to get that first fast pass, that you're already going to have to wait the maximum time, what is it, 2 hours or so, before you can pull another fast pass. And so you kind of set your whole day back.
That's what happened the first day, where you get that first fast pass that isn't till in the afternoon almost, and you've got to wait another 2 hours before you can get another one.
Yeah, and I hate that, because then it also backs you up against the late fast pass that you pulled. Mm-hmm. You know, I know that I understand why they do it that way, but I don't know, maybe I'm getting spoiled by Walt Disney World's scheduled fast passes, but it seems so awkward now.
Yeah, that was one thing we did miss, of just being able to pull up the app and get another fast pass, you know.
Right. Well, because you were about, 2 weeks too soon or 4 weeks too soon? Because MaxPass went live.
Yeah. You know, I'm not used to having to be a fast pass runner anymore.
All right. So we talked about getting on the ride. Let's get to the fun part and talk about the ride itself. Talk about the experience of Guardians of the Galaxy Mission Breakout.
So that the first time I rode it, I actually ended up missing a lot, because, you know, it's your first ride. You're excited. It's the same, you know, it's the same queue and everything as Tower of Terror was. So I knew as soon as, you know, where to go. As soon as they let you into the little pre-show room, you know where the door is to let you into the next part of the queue.
Right.
So that was as soon as they let us in the room, I make my way to that door. But for this ride, that's actually bad, because you can't see any, like, you can see what's on the TV screen that they're showing, but you can't actually see Rocket and everything that he's doing and going on. So yeah, I could see,
because it's basically right over your head at that point.
Right. So it's like, I thought I was doing good to be able to get on the ride quickly. And then here I am trying to lean into the guy next to me to see what's going on up above me.
Yeah. Yeah. Which is why it's a good thing that you got to go back multiple times.
Yes, that was one of the benefits of having a little kid and being able to do rider swap. Because each person, we each had a fast pass. So then each time we rode, we were able to get a rider swap as well.
Right, right.
So that, you know, the two fast passes we would get for me and my wife would turn into another two each time we rode.
Yep, yep. Bonus rides.
Yep.
Gotta love it.
But the detail and everything in the queue, just incredible how much they put in there, pulling from all their properties, whether it's the movies, the TV shows, you know, everything's in there. I was disappointed we never actually went through the standby line. All we ever did was the fast pass line. So we missed a lot of the collector's stuff that's in the display cases and cabinets. Yeah.
I guess that's the trade-off. You know, you get the bonus of rider swap and you know, a quick chance to get a second ride. But then by the same token, because you were there with small children and, you know, you don't want to – it's harder for a young child to put up with the very long standby line. You kind of can't just say, okay, we're going to do it this time, right? We're just going to stick it out so I can see everything.
Right, because, you know – As it had just opened, it was pretty much always at least a 2-hour wait. And although we had a lot of days in the park, we still didn't want to give up 2 hours just to wait in line for it.
Yeah.
So the other thing that, you know, besides the detail is just the repeatability of the ride. That was the one thing I didn't like about this version of the Tower of Terror. Is because it was pretty much the same ride every time. They finally fixed that, adding some variations to it, where the drop sequence is different, and the music and the different scenes you get to see are different each time.
Yeah, yeah, it's a nice thing. I'm really glad that they added in some variability like that. It's the one thing that, more than, you know, any other of the minor things that the Disneyland version of the attraction was missing. So as long as they were updating, it's nice that they updated functionality too and not just the dressing.
Yes, because even as many times as we were able to ride it, we still didn't get to hear every song or see every scene. So we still missed stuff, and we probably each rode it 6 or 7 times while we were there throughout the trip.
Yeah.
And we still didn't get to see every scene or all the combinations while we were there.
All right. Cool. So talk about other things on the California Adventure side that stood out one way or another. Either attractions that, you know, were pleasant surprises, things that maybe didn't go as you expected, either side of the coin there.
The other stuff that we really enjoyed was the rest of the Summer of Heroes stuff that they were putting on, because they had where you could go in and basically choose, you know, well, test to see which superhero you most closely related to. So they had iPads set up to where you could stand in line and do a little 10-question survey, basically, and figure out which superhero you most closely identified with.
Okay.
And then you get a sticker or a comic book explaining all the different superheroes and a little Guardians comic book in the back, like a little 4-page comic after all the descriptive stuff. So, of course, we had to stand in line to do that, and they let each family go. So each family would get an iPad and however many people wanted to take the quiz. And my son was all excited because he answers all the questions, even though it was a little bit over his head, some of the questions for what they were asking for. He didn't quite understand all the questions.
Sure.
So, you know, older kids would probably get it a little bit better, but he was able to test and actually get what's called Unity. So he closely embodied all the Avengers.
Okay.
So he gets the Avengers symbol. Well, no, he gets the Avengers symbol because he has the best traits of all of them.
Very nice.
Per se. And then I did it and I get Thor. So then that was the running thing, you know. It's because I look like Thor, right? So.
It's the long flowing hair that gets him.
Right. You know, my wife rolled her eyes at that too. But. But it was fun to do. They had a whole backdrop set up with all the different symbols of the different superheroes that you could take your picture with after. Right. And then they had several different meet and greets you could do with the characters. Black Widow would come out. Spider-Man would come out. Captain America would come out. Probably the most exciting thing, I say that, you know, because it was something free that they were doing, was free face painting for any superhero you wanted to get painted on your face.
Oh, that's nice.
So they had a card with pretty much all the superheroes were on there that you could pick from. You could get Groot, Captain America, Spider-Man, Black Panther, the Hulk, Thor. So as soon as we were able to do that and get in line, you know, waiting in line, my son wanted Spider-Man, and it was pretty detailed. You know, a quarter of the face was covered with the Spider-Man mask. Okay. And since I had to wait in line with him, I figured I was going to get my face painted too.
Oh, sure.
You know, but you had all the parents that were waiting in line. The only thing you couldn't get as an adult was a full face paint.
Okay, I could see that.
You could get partial, but you couldn't get anything that covered your face.
Right. Well, yeah, that's important, especially at Disneyland where they put your picture on your ticket, right?
Yeah. Because they had for kids, you could get your face painted completely green like the Hulk and all the details on that. So we did that a couple times to get our face painted. Anything free that Disney's going to give out. Worth the wait in line.
Get in line twice.
To help enjoy the day, yeah.
All right. And so did you try Avengers Academy?
We looked at it, and my son was not impressed with what they were doing, so he wasn't interested.
So he wasn't into it. Okay.
Yeah, because I guess in the beginning they're showing you the different moves that you're going to need to learn to do.
Right, right.
And it's not the same as, you know, Star Wars, where you actually get the lightsaber to do something with, where he's excited for that, but to pretend you're throwing a shield or blocking or throwing a punch, he wants something a little bit more active.
So wait, so by Memorial Day weekend, they were already not actually distributing the shields?
When you were going through your training, you didn't have actual shield.
Oh, okay.
I believe when you actually did the battle at the end, you still got the shield. But to learn the moves, so to speak,
right,
you didn't have anything.
Okay. Well, because David Platt and I had talked about this because he was there, you know, the weekend this all opened. And he had noticed that there were some flaws maybe in the design of the Avengers Academy program, which we described when we were talking about it as the, you know, shooting or the firing squad that gathered in a circle. Right. Because you've got all these kids facing into the middle of a circle and then throwing their shields at a target in the middle.
Yeah. My son would have been one of the ones getting hit in the face with a shield, more than likely.
Yeah, exactly. And he said he saw several kids every show. There was at least one or two that got hit in the face with a shield. So we were wondering how long it would actually continue.
Yeah.
All right. Well, so lots of good stuff, and we've heard a lot of wonderful things about the Summer of Heroes stuff that was going on. So it's going to be interesting to see how much of that carries over as they work on, you know, building a superhero land, which they kind of announced at D23 without giving us any detail. They just said it was coming.
Yeah.
So it'll be interesting to see how much of this they continue to do to kind of lead up to it. Any of the other things at California Adventure stand out before
we had two other things that stood out, one good and one bad.
Okay.
I'll get the bad one out of the way first. You probably should have had Dave on earlier to give his tip about always taking a picture of your ticket.
Yes.
Because sure enough, the one morning when we were separated, So I was getting fast passes and my wife was taking the kids to the ride. And by the time we met up, she checked her pockets and realized tickets missing. So while she was retracing her steps, she couldn't find it. So I took the kids on a ride while she was going to go to guest services and see if they could straighten it out. But they needed our tickets to be able to get the barcode off of our ticket so they could find hers to reprint it. Whereas if she would have had a picture of it.
Right. She'd have the barcode right there.
Yep. And they would have just been able to reissue it right away.
Yep. Yep. So we'll repeat that tip because it's so important, right? At Disneyland in particular, you know, when you're carrying around a hard copy ticket, basically, use your camera phone, snap a picture of the front and back of your ticket, because that way you have the front that has your photo on it and the back that has the barcode on it. And that allows the folks at guest services to very quickly both verify your ticket and reprint it. You know, if you only have one or the other, it can help, but not nearly as much.
Yeah. So needless to say, after that, we had pictures of all of our tickets. We never lost a ticket again, but we had pictures of all of them at that point.
But that's the whole point, right? Taking the picture is what guarantees that you'll never need the picture.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then the other thing, more happened to my wife than me, where I was just trying to live vicariously through her, was while I was in line getting a fast pass, she was sitting outside of the Monsters, Inc. area. And we're texting back and forth, you know, trying to figure out what we're going to do next to meet up. And then she just texts me and says, Tim Robbins is standing right next to her.
Cool.
And I'm like, seriously? She's like, yeah. I was like, well, take a picture. Send it to me. Oh, no, he's too close. I can't take a picture. You know, it'd be awkward. And then I'm just freaking out even more that he's that close that if she raises her phone up, he's going to notice.
Right, and it's going to be obvious.
Yeah, it's like, well, say hi or something. But he was, you know, touring with his family. So she did the polite thing and let him enjoy his morning at the park. Waited till he walked off to take some stalkerish pictures of him to send to me.
Stalkerish pictures as he ran away.
Yeah, because he had a cast member with him taking them through the park. So they were going in through the exits of a lot of the rides.
Right, right. Yeah, the VIP tour for a true VIP.
Yes. So it was one of those things when I finally did meet up with him, he had just went on Monsters, Inc., and I was debating whether I should wait there to try and see him when he came out or not, but we decided the park time was more valuable than that, so we moved on.
Yeah, more valuable than gawking time.
Yeah.
All right, well, so that's attractions and things at California Adventure. Any dining experiences on that side that stood out?
Yes. Needless to say, we have a very simple palate in our family. None of us are adventurous eaters. And pretty much every meal was at the Smoke Jumpers Grill.
Okay.
So if you want basic hamburgers, chicken nuggets, I believe they had a chicken sandwich as well. Smoke Jumpers is pretty much the only place in DCA.
Okay. So good stuff sounds like, I mean, good enough that you kept coming back.
It's your typical stuff, theme park food, nothing overly great, but enough to keep you going through the day.
Right. And sounds like reliable, you know, you can count on it. All right. Well, so that's DCA. Let's talk about, you know, the original. Let's talk about Disneyland theme park. What were the things, first of all, what were the things that were the big goals for Disneyland, on this particular trip?
So this trip, my son agreed that he would try the Matterhorn. So that was going to be a big, you know, something new
that
he had never done before. Semi roller coaster-ish.
Right, right. Roller coaster leveling up.
Right. You know, jumping from, you know, Goofy's coaster to Matterhorn is a big jump for a kid.
It is.
And some of the dark rides that we just don't have. So Alice is a big one that we like. Snow White, canal boats, a lot of the Fantasyland stuff. we wanted to make sure we were able to do most of it, since we don't get to do those when we're in Disney World.
Sure. And what things, first of all, how did Matterhorn go?
Matterhorn, he pretty much cried throughout the entire queue and was freaking out, nervous.
Okay.
But as soon as they got on and finished, he was excited and ready to go back on again. One ended up being one of his favorite rides.
That's great. I just had exactly this exchange with actually my cousin is at Walt Disney World right now with his daughters. And he had posted a picture from I think it was just Seven Dwarfs Mine Train, but you know, his daughters hadn't done much roller coaster stuff at all before, so that was a first. And you know, one has this big huge grin on her face, and the other one, you know, looks like she's watching the slaughter of everyone she loves. and I posted, I said, you know, my son gets the same look on his face, except as soon as he steps off the ride, the first thing out of his mouth is, you know, best ride ever.
Mm-hmm.
And to which my cousin responded, exactly.
Yeah. My back was probably hoping that he didn't love it as much as he did, but it's one of those things you do for your kids, right?
Yeah, exactly. Well, now, I have to ask, how tall are you?
I'm about 5'11".
Okay, well, so you're the same height I am then. The part for me that was so hard about Matterhorn, it wasn't so much my back, it was my knee. Mm-hmm. Because the way those cars are built, it's like that little scoop for the, you know, entrance and exit out of the car is exactly at my kneecap level. And I swear that I rode that whole ride with like that groove right next to your kneecap, resting in that spot on the side of the car.
Yeah, that's not fun.
I love the tradition of it, and the upgrades to the Yetis is great, but it just means I limp for the next half hour.
Mm-hmm.
All right, so that went well. What else was a standout on the Disneyland side?
The biggest standout was two things, actually. The first one is more because it's one of my favorites, the Tiki Room.
Okay.
My wife's not as big of a Tiki fan, so typically I'll take one of the kids on that when she's riding something else that they can't, and it ends up happening every time, and this time wasn't any different. I believe my wife and son were going to ride Indiana Jones, and I took my daughter into the Tiki Room, and she had a blast. Just as soon as the show started, she was clapping and dancing and giggling the whole time.
Awesome.
Just loving the show. And then, you know, that just makes me light up since it's one of my favorites as well. So every time it seems to happen, because the same thing happened when my son was about the same age. Wife went to go ride something else, me and my son in the Tiki Room, and he just can't stop cutting up because he's loving it so much. And then it never fails. If we all go in a family, everyone just sits there and watches the show and nothing special. But for some reason, when it's just me and one of the kids one-on-one, they just light up with the Tiki Room.
It's dad magic.
Mm-hmm.
Now, do you let them bring their Dole Whip in?
Usually I'm the one eating that, not them.
Okay. Yeah, that's the other element that could have contributed to it being a different experience with dad.
Yeah. And then the other thing was Mickey and the Magical Map.
Yes.
It's a really good, well-done show. One of the better shows that they have at any Disney park to sit there and watch. And more recently, my daughter has been taking an interest in the characters, finally starting to watch a little bit of TV to see Mickey Mouse and stuff like that. And this trip, pretty much everything just went, you know, she went overboard for all the characters this trip and is obsessed with Mickey and Minnie Mouse. So as soon as he came out for the show, she just could not stop smiling and screaming for Mickey, Mickey, Mickey. And then every time he would disappear behind the screen, she would almost start crying.
Oh, no.
Like, bring Mickey back. Like, I don't care about any of these other people. I just want Mickey back on stage. And then he'd come back out for the next scene and she'd start clapping again. But then she had a complete meltdown once the show was over and everybody left the stage.
Oh, no, because now Mickey was gone.
Mickey was gone, just in complete tears, and could not understand where Mickey go. So while it was fun during the show to see her so excited, it was rough at the end to try and get her out of there and get her distracted with something else.
Sure, sure. All right, so a couple of great show experiences on the Disneyland side, which is great to hear and yeah, love.
Yeah, because the other show we did, they have another show area. I forget what it's called. In the Fantasyland area there, where we watched a Tangled show. And that was another good one because they have all the kids sit on mats real close up to the stage to get them to participate in the show and stuff, and really interactive for them as well.
Yeah, it sounds like it. Sounds like it. And I love when kids warm up to characters like that. It's so much fun to see it happen and see it unfold in front of you.
Right, because it was pretty much a progress throughout the trip. Started off timid, especially with the non-face characters. Very, very timid. It wasn't until we ended up meeting Tigger that she kind of opened up more and more to the characters and was better. Face characters, she would light up right away. You know, I guess they seem more personable to her, that something she could relate to, as aside from a big furry character. But by the end of the trip, she was a pro with meeting characters for sure.
Cool. All right. So, any dining on the Disneyland side? I mean, obviously you enjoyed your Dole Whips, but, any other foodstuffs on the Disneyland side worth checking out?
Disneyland side, every time we go, we have to stop at Plaza.
Now, do you do the character breakfast at the Plaza, or do you just do the quick service lunch and dinner, which are both
just the usually typically the quick service lunch, to where get the fried chicken or the pasta and have enough for everybody to split. You know, it's quality food for a quick service meal.
Yeah, it really is. It's good comfort food type stuff and plenty of it.
Yeah. Portions are always, you know, large enough for everyone to share a little bit here and there. You don't mind sharing because you have so much.
Right, right. And then any other sort of, you know, downtown Disney or Disneyland sort of resort space experiences that worth mentioning?
Whether we're in Disneyland or when we go to Disney World, downtown Disney there in Disneyland, we went to Naples. Since we always love the pizza there, or the same company does the Via Napoli in Epcot.
Right, right.
So we make sure to get pizza when we're in Disney there.
Yeah, it is good stuff.
And it was actually nice because the weather was beautiful for the whole trip. So when we were at Naples, we were able to eat outside on the second floor balcony.
So that's great.
Overlooking the whole downtown Disney area there, which was really nice. That was the first time we were able to sit up there and overlook everything while we were having our meal.
Yeah, no, that's a great little spot. I think people don't know, you know, enough people don't know about it. I mean, it's almost to me kind of like the upstairs dining at Columbia Harbor House, right? It's like that best kept secret kind of thing. There is that great little kind of upstairs terrace at Naples. And it's a really nice view. You know, you get to sit out there. A lot of times there's a nice breeze and you really get a nice overview of that whole, you know, downtown Disney area. Fun people watching.
Yeah. The other meal we had that we try and always pretty much always do when we're in Disneyland is go to Goofy's Kitchen at the Disneyland Hotel.
Yeah.
Typically every trip we'll try and do at least one character meal. Anything more than that, it gets a little pricey for the kids since they don't necessarily eat enough for a character meal to be worth it. But Goofy's Kitchen, we love the food there for the breakfast buffet. I guess more brunch, since they have a wide variety of food, and it's always nice to go get something, I guess, healthier to eat, and then dessert, and then something else to eat, and then another dessert.
Right, as long as you keep trading off, why not?
Yeah, you know, plenty of eggs and biscuits and bacon, and then you can get ice cream and cookies and pudding and all kinds of stuff.
Sure. And obviously a much better experience as your, you know, daughter was warming up to characters too.
Yeah, and it helps she's free at those meals as well.
That's
for,
true.
For now, at least.
For now, right. Just a little while longer. Nice bonus.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Well, you know, we're kind of getting to the point where we start wrapping things up, and I have a couple of wrap-up questions that I always like to ask. The first is, you know, thinking back, you've been to Disneyland a number of times. You've been to Walt Disney World a number of times. And people sometimes say, you know, you keep going back. Why would you do that? And my answer is always, look, there's always something about each trip that is unique, is different, is the thing that reminds me of a particular trip. And so for you on this particular trip, what's that thing? What's that moment that's going to say, you know, Memorial Day 2017, this, when I think of that trip, this is the memory that it's going to trigger.
For me, it has to be that one-on-one experience with my daughter in the Tiki Room. It's just something about how excited she got to where while the show's going on, I completely forgot about whatever was happening with the show and just watching her the whole time.
Yeah.
It's just one of those things that you'll never be able to duplicate again. But it was just so amazing to be there for.
Yeah, and that's a great example of the kind of thing when people ask me, you know, how young is too young to take a kid? And I always respond, well, there's really no such thing. I mean, if the kid is old enough that you'll take them anywhere, then they're old enough for a Walt Disney World or Disneyland trip mm-hmm. for just that reason. She may never remember that first experience at the Tiki Room, but I guarantee you, you'll remember it. And why deny yourself that opportunity to make that memory that you don't get a chance to make when they're 7 or 8 because they just don't react that way anymore?
Yeah. We're definitely take them as soon as they can go. For our daughter, her first trip to Disney World was while my wife was still on maternity leave.
Okay.
Because she had to use all her vacation. And it's like, well, I'm using all my vacation for the year to be off, you know, after our daughter was born. We might as well take a trip at the end of it.
Sure. Yeah. And then the last wrap-up question is, you know, this was a trip that you took right after a holiday weekend, but you had a longer Disneyland trip staying off-site. For somebody who's considering a similar trip, you know, young kids, staying off-site, maybe a longer trip, you know, more park days than maybe, you know, a lot of people will do, because I know a lot of people do 2 or 3 days at Disneyland, and I always say, you know, you can find plenty to do for a longer trip. What's one or two pieces of advice you would give to somebody considering a similar trip, a longer trip, you know, more days in the park and staying off site?
With more days in the park, it just made it to where you could slow down and enjoy everything. There was no rushing. We got to do this. We have to do this. We have to do that. If we missed something, we still had time. We knew we were going to be there for enough days. It made it less stressful. Let's put it that way.
Sure.
Where if we only had 3 days, we would have been stressing out to be able to ride everything we wanted to ride and probably wouldn't have been able to re-ride everything we wanted to re-ride. So with this, we were able to take our time. And if we found something we liked, we'll just ride it again and, you know, maybe not rush to the next thing in line.
Right, right. Yeah, it's a great point and a great bit of advice that when you've got the time, you know, be conscious of slowing down and don't let yourself get caught up in that tendency to start to rush and feel the pressure. You know, I think it's easy to forget that, and it's good to remind yourself you've got plenty of time. Slow down. You can always catch it on the backside, so to speak. Well, Dustin, thanks so much for coming on the show and talking about your experience. Really was, you know, it took us a little time to get this scheduled. We had a couple of near misses in getting organized, but I'm really glad we got it worked out and you were able to come on and share your vacation story with us.
Yeah, thanks for having me. It's always fun talking Disney.
One little spark of inspiration is at the heart of all creation. Right at the start of everything that's new, one little spark lights up for you. Oh, hello there. So glad you could come along. I am the Dreamfinder. Musical notes. What delightful melodies those will make. I love these flights of fancy, searching the countryside for sounds, colors, ideas, anything that sparks the imagination. A sunbeam, that's a good one. Everything that I can collect can inspire amazing and marvelous new ideas. And you never know what kind of figment you may come up with. Here's my favorite. Tiny wings, eyes big and yellow, horns of a steer, but a lovable fella. From head to tail, he's royal purple pigment, and there, voila, you've got a figment of imagination.